Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Take a $103 billion war funding request. Add $20 billion worth of congressional pork. Stir with generous doses of political posturing. And you find yourself on the White House lawn this morning with President Bush. He promised once again his veto is coming. The only question is when. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, online at shrm.org. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years, with a commitment to provide objective financial advice.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's the 3rd of April today, Tuesday. Great to have you with us. President Bush had a press conference this morning. His opening statement ran about 10 minutes or so, but he made his point within the first minute and a half.
It has now been 57 days since I requested that Congress pass emergency funds for our troops. Instead of passing clean bills that fund our troops on the front lines, the House and Senate have spent this time debating bills that undercut the troops.
Which is where the veto threat comes in. The president's asking for a clean bill, $103 billion straight up, no deadlines, no nothing. Congress is out of town for its spring recess, but the Democrats who were in Washington today weren't making many conciliatory noises either. Rumors of a deal on immigration reform have been making the rounds in the Capitol lately. There's nothing official in the headlines today, but immigration is still in the news. The government has stopped accepting applications for a specific and a highly sought-after kind of work visa. They're called H-1Bs, and they're meant for skilled foreigners, which has usually meant high-tech workers. The legal limit is 65,000 of them a year. By midday today, 150,000 applications had been received. It might help to mention here that the application period began yesterday. From the America's Desk at WLRN, Marketplace's Dan Gratch reports.
Last year, it took 2 months to run out of H-1B visas for high-skilled workers. This year, just 2 days. The immigration processing centers in Vermont and California were overwhelmed by the 150,000 applications.
Shocking number. I mean, it's unprecedented.
That's immigration attorney Susan Cohen with the firm Mintz Levin in Boston. She says it'll be another year before new applications will be accepted, for a start date of October 2008.
That's just not viable. Business has to get done now. If there was ever a case to be made that we need more visa numbers, it was just made today.
H-1B visas are used by U.S. companies to fill engineering, computer programming, and other technology jobs. The companies say there aren't enough U.S. workers to fill these jobs, forcing them to recruit overseas. Immigration attorney Nancy Jo Merritt is with Fenimore Craig in Phoenix. She wrote an email this afternoon telling her clients the visa cap had already been hit. Her clients responded with
panic and frustration and annoyance. That's why I tell them, there's nothing I can do. Contact your congressional representatives. Let them know that this is simply unreal.
High-tech companies like Oracle, Cisco, and Microsoft rely on foreign workers to fill their ranks. Robert Hoffman's a vice president at Oracle.
It's absurd to recruit the world's top talent to train in our world-leading universities, hand them a diploma, and then tell them that there is no place for them in our economy.
Immigration officials say they'll hold a lottery to pick from the visa applications they've already received. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Oil speculators are clearly feeling better about the state of things. Crude prices fell 2.3% today, down under $65 a barrel. But Detroit is still losing market share to more conservation-minded competition. All three U.S. car makers reported lower sales last month than this time a year ago. GM and Chrysler were off about 4%, Ford down 9%. Toyota up 12%, partly on record sales of hybrids. Google used to be a straight search engine. It's really more of an ad company now, and not just online either. Today, the company announced a deal with EchoStar to sell ads on satellite television. Advertisers spent about $70 billion on TV spots last year, so you can't really blame Google for wanting a piece of that action. And Marketplace's Amy Scott reports it's trying to offer a little something extra.
Google has already experimented with advertising in other media. It's tried selling radio spots and newspaper ads. Now Google will begin auctioning ad space on EchoStar's Dish Network. Max Robbins is editor-in-chief of Broadcasting and Cable Magazine. He says Google's technology gives advertisers something they crave.
They want to show a return on investment. And I think Google is all about finding ways to prove the effectiveness of the advertising.
But other companies are in that business as well. Next month, Nielsen Media Research will provide commercial ratings to better measure ad viewership. Advertising analyst Emily Riley is with Jupiter Research. She says the networks that have ad space to sell also track that kind of information. She doubts they'll be too keen to work with Google.
They have massive amounts of data about what audiences are doing, what they're watching. So as soon as Google gets a hold of this, their particular leg up is gone.
Google plans to target its ads using audience information from the Dish Network's set-top boxes, but because of privacy protections, it won't have access to data on individual households. Search industry analyst Danny Sullivan says Google may find it hard to reach a receptive TV audience.
With search advertising, people are always telling you exactly what they want. Whereas with television advertising, no one's expressing their desire other than they'd like to watch a TV show.
But Sullivan says if Google didn't get into the business, others would. In fact, companies like eBay and SpotRunner have. He says Google doesn't want to make the same mistake it did with video search. When its own efforts didn't take off, it ended up paying $1.6 billion to buy YouTube. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
If you've ever tried to buy something on credit, you know how important your credit score is and how your mortgage or your car loan can ride on one lousy number. It turns out even the biggest banks in the world have to worry about their scores. Moody's is one of the companies that makes it their business to rank the creditworthiness of those banks. It changed its ranking system not too long ago and upgraded ratings for 150 banks because they were deemed more likely to win a government bailout should they run into trouble. Today, though, Moody's changed its mind. It said it won't be considering those bailouts after all. Marketplace's Bob Moon explains why and why it matters.
Innovation is not always rewarded, and in the case of this bold new idea from Moody's, it quickly came under intense ridicule from financial analysts around the world. One even spoke of laughing out loud to learn that several banks in Iceland had been given AAA ratings equal to those of ExxonMobil and even the U.S. Treasury. Still, New York University professor Edward Altman says he understands the logic. It's similar to the cosigner on a car loan.
When there is a guarantor of an obligation, one usually evaluates the creditworthiness of the guarantor as well as the entity being guaranteed.
Moody's figured there's a 98% chance, for example, that J.P. Morgan would get government help in a crisis. But at the independent research firm CreditSights, analyst John Raymond says that's not what lenders care about.
The way that ratings are used in the capital markets, people prefer ratings to give them an indication of how far away a bank is from getting into financial difficulties.
Raymond says Moody's ended up hurting its credibility as a reliable source of information. And NYU's Edward Altman says even though Moody's was only offering more data for investors to consider, there was at least a perception it was guesswork. That's because governments aren't exactly the same as a signer.
There was no guarantee at all that the sovereign would bail out these banks, and therefore it was a leap of faith to assume that they would.
So today, Moody's began a review toward cutting its ratings on more than 40 U.S. and European banks that it had recently upgraded. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Apologies to Chicago Cubs fans out there, and there are a lot of you. We were talking about the sale of its parent company, Tribune, yesterday, and I mentioned the Cubs had lost to Cleveland. The Cubbies did lose, but to Cincinnati. On Wall Street, it was a home run today, or at least a triple to deep right field. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The Italian government's looking to get out of the airline business, and you can't really blame them. Alitalia, the Italian state-owned carrier, has been on an extended losing streak. It's finished in the red 6 of the past 7 years. But the potential buyer's raising some eyebrows. The Russian airline Aeroflot has joined the bidding. Aeroflot's state-owned too, of course. So the deal would mean doing business with the Kremlin. From the Marketplace European desk in London, Stephen Beard reports.
The Italian government seems desperate to bail out of Alitalia. The airline has become a black hole for taxpayers' cash. It lost $500 million last year. David Learmount of Flight International magazine says the government is right to offload the bulk of its 49% stake, and selling it to a group controlled by Aeroflot would make perfect sense.
The international division of the airline, first of all, has, over the very long term, an absolutely world-class safety record. Operationally speaking, it's always been a first-class airline. That is, the international division has been, and that's what we're talking about here.
It's Aeroflot's domestic operations that have a terrible record for safety and service, he says. But there are other worries about Aeroflot taking a large stake in Italy's national carrier. Aeroflot is controlled by the Kremlin, says analyst Nick Redman. And President Putin has used Aeroflot politically, for example, to punish the US.
The clearest indication we have of that was very recently when Aeroflot decided to place an order, specifically on the Kremlin's instructions, for Airbus jets over Boeing.
The bid for the Alitalia stake is part of a trend of Russians awash with oil money buying European assets. But Redman says there are some reservations here.
I think also there will be some doubt until Russia shows itself a little bit more open to foreign investment in some of the sensitive sectors of its own economy.
But the Italian government seems more keen to offload its stake in Alitalia than fret about Putin's methods and motives. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
I don't know when the last time they got a hurricane in Denver was, but the Tropical Meteorology Project at Colorado State University thinks the 2007 hurricane season's going to be a big one. Nine storms and at least one major hurricane that's going to hit the coast someplace. If you live on Florida's Atlantic side or on the Gulf of Mexico, chances are your insurance rates have shot up the past few years. When they go to justify those increases, insurers often use computerized risk models. Now, one modeling company has started incorporating climate change into its projections, which has landed it squarely in the eye of a political storm. Jeff Broomfield reports.
Hurricanes are all too familiar to most Floridians.
You're going to have water coming up into Miami with the wrong track.
As the storm passes, our number one priority is saving lives.
By late October, there was only one letter left in the hurricane alphabet, W.
In the past decade, almost half the storms to hit the U.S. have struck the Sunshine State. In many coastal areas, property insurance has more than doubled since 2004.
One of the number one political issues in the last election for Florida was the cost of a homeowner's insurance.
Kevin McCarty is the state's insurance commissioner. He says the rise in insurance costs has partly to do with how companies project future losses. Companies have taken to justifying rate hikes through risk models built by independent firms. Those models can use data from past hurricanes to predict future ones. But this year, one company called Risk Management Solutions revised their model to include climate change.
We believe that its scientific consensus is that this is the current risk, and we're just trying to reflect the risk in the most appropriate manner.
That's Mitch Sattler, Vice President for Public Policy at RMS. Over the next 5 years, the new model shows that Category 3 through 5 storms are 36% more likely to strike the state than previously thought. Georgia Tech hurricane researcher Judith Curry.
Warmer temperatures in the North Atlantic mean more hurricanes and stronger hurricanes.
But Curry says predicting global warming's precise effect is tricky. Global warming might have a substantial impact, or it might not.
I mean, that's what insurance is all about.
The devil is in the details of RMS's calculations. And unlike academic studies on climate change, they keep those models under wraps. If regulators look at them directly, they become part of the public record. Companies argue that violates trade secrets. Mitch Sattler.
Models are actually built on data, and data is sort of the lifeline of these models, and that's something that we just don't want in the hands of our four or five competitors.
Some Florida legislators say that RMS's secretiveness helps insurers justify more rate hikes. Insurance Commissioner McCarthy is frustrated.
being able to bring transparency to this process is thwarted by this trade secret protection that they insist upon.
Some in the scientific community agree. Mark Frankel is with the American Association for the Advancement of Science, the nation's largest scientific organization.
It seems to me they have a responsibility to make sure that the model is thoroughly vetted and peer-reviewed by very capable scientists.
A compromise may be in the offing. McCarty says a group of independent experts has signed a non-disclosure agreement so it can review the new model. The commission will decide in May whether insurers can use it. That'll be just before the beginning of this year's hurricane season. In Washington, I'm Jeff Brumfield for Marketplace.
Coming up, they're called fixers for a reason.
They watch your stuff, sleep in the shady hotel room next door, tell you which road is safe. If you can't trust them, who can you trust?
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials gained 128 points today, up 1% to close at 12,510. The Nasdaq climbed 28 points, 1.1% to close at 2450. The S&P 500 rose 13 points, that's about 0.9%, finished at 1437. The National Association of Realtors reported that its index of pending sales of existing homes edged up 0.7%. Beazer Homes rose about 0.5% on that news. Accredited home lenders shot up more than 18%. This after the subprime mortgage lender said it had snared a loan from a hedge fund. Other major movers on the markets were Alcoa up 1.75%, and Altria climbed 2.1%. Bond prices slipped. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 4.67%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Cargill. Collaborate, create, succeed. This is how Cargill works with customers to bring about ideas for nourishing the world. And by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals at Vanguard.com. Heard a report on Marketplace that you just have to share with your friends, family, or coworkers? Help is just a click away. Our website has each day's complete newscast, individual stories, and transcripts, so you can listen again, print them out, or email them to everyone you know. It's all at marketplace.org.
Here's a look at the Marketplace date book for events coming up Wednesday. The Commerce Department releases the February report on factory orders. President Bush has lunch with military personnel at Fort Irwin, California. And vitamin C turns 75. University of Pittsburgh professor Charles Glenn King isolated the vitamin on April 4, 1932. As the tale goes, thousands of lemons gave their lives so that scurvy, a disease caused by vitamin C deficiency, could be defeated. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Some of the most lucrative business deals you can find right now are in some of the most dangerous places in the world. Play your cards right in Iraq or Afghanistan, and you can do pretty well for yourself, despite the enormous potential for things to end badly. When business people or journalists go to those places, they need somebody who speaks the language, who knows who to talk to and how to get access to them. It's somebody they may have to trust with their money or their lives. Today, our series, Working, looking at the life of a single worker in the global economy, continues. From Beirut, Lebanon, Kelly McEvers brings us this profile of a fixer.
The first time I meet Tarek Haider Iskander, he's hanging around my hotel, introducing himself to reporters.
I put my number phone. And I put my address email in Hotmail. My name, Tarek Haider Iskander.
He asks my advice on how to design his business card. What would be the name of your business?
Tango TFD, translator, fixer, driver. Do you think it's okay?
Yeah, I think it's good, actually. Yeah, I think it's good.
You can call me Tango. Okay. I like this name.
Tarek is Lebanese, but he grew up in the Democratic Republic of Congo. His father ran an import-export business there. Tarek first worked as a fixer for investors who visited Congo.
Some businessmen, they came from Belgium. They want to work in diamond. Many people, they want to make a company for construction. to take idea about the forest, to cut wood. Some people, they want to make a hotel and restaurant.
Tarek drove them around, told them who to bribe. He did this work for 4 years. Then...
I feel I'm very sick, so I came back to Lebanon.
It was May 2006. 1 month later, Lebanon was at war with Israel. During the first week of fighting, Tarek's cousins were near a mosque targeted by an Israeli airstrike.
You went to the hospital to find your relatives?
Find. There is three who's died.
And three others seriously injured. Reporters crowded the waiting room.
So now what happened at the hospital?
Next day, this journalist came to have an interview with my relative.
Tarek translated for the journalist what his relatives were saying.
And she called me to the cafeteria. She told me, I want to help you. I told her how. She told me, okay, we'll give you some money for you and your family, like a help. I told her, no, listen, if you want to help me, really, I don't want you to give me free money for nothing. I can work for you and you can pay me. In this way, I can accept your money only.
So Tarek worked for her throughout the war. He earned $1,500 that month. Now he's on his own. Some months he makes as little as $200 working with journalists.
My name is Alfonso Moral. I am a photographer from Spain. I want to see how is the life after the war and how is the reconstruction of the buildings. And I met Tarek first time during the war. He knows a lot of people. Yeah, he have really, really good contacts.
So where are we going right now?
To the office. To the office of Hezbollah to take the permission first.
Okay.
The militant group Hezbollah controls the part of Beirut where Alfonso wants to work. Another photographer I met waited 2 weeks just to get 1 hour of access here. But Alfonso has Tarek. And it turns out Tarek knows a guy in the Hezbollah front office. The photographer just got access to photograph for the entire day. This is not an easy thing to do. Alfonso wants to photograph the destruction up close. Tarek takes him to a 10-story building that looks like it was sliced in half lengthwise by a bomb. We climb over mangled rebar and broken concrete past deserted apartments. Tarek has a hunch some people still live here.
Haji! Ya Haji!
A woman cracks open the door. Tarek tells her she's much too beautiful to be sweeping the floor. She invites us in, and Alfonso gets the intimate portraits he wanted. Most nights, Tarek stays in a $6-a-night hostel.
So how many beds in one room?
Five.
He meets journalists here, usually the low-paid freelance types. The manager lets them rent the hotel's car.
What is the best place to go for still homes broken and...
I can advise you to visit three places.
Okay.
First thing, Ventish
That's Tarek with Zariah Miller, another photographer, an American. They're headed south to the border with Israel, where the war started.
All here is my relative, uncle, blah, aunt, aunt, like things. My relative.
Tarek's own hometown was one of the hardest hit.
So this is my village.
He shows Zariah the rubble that once was his house. He sounds like he's told the story before.
Yeah, it was four home. One home, two floor, one home, another home beside. In this area, we lost everything. We didn't get anything until now.
Tarek sees his family up the road. His mother and sister rent a decrepit house behind where their old house used to be.
This is my mother. This is my uncle.
We stop for tea. Tarek's mother asks if he's making any money in Beirut. He says he's doing great. His mother squints. I don't think she believes him. Later, I ask Tarek how he feels about selling his own misery to journalists. He says that's not the way he sees it.
I want to show them the truth. I want to show them the truth. They have to pick up these pictures and the message from the east to the west.
That night, Tarek takes Zariah to a room for rent in a rundown building near the border. This is where Zariah is supposed to spend the night. Zariah is surprised to see a generator in a darkened building. There's no electricity. Tarek tells Zariah he'll be fine.
You have to put a good cover because now it's cold. If anything happens with you, direct call me.
Zariah tries to stop the conversation there. I can tell he's ready to be done with Tarek. He pays Tarek $20 for a day's work.
And we have money to give for gas and everything when you get back.
Tarek promises to drive the rental car back to Beirut. He says he'll get Zariah's $200 deposit and return the money in a few days.
And he will give it. Okay.
Trouble is, it doesn't happen that way. Tarek returns the car, but he keeps the money. I spend a few days looking for Tarek with my own fixer, Muhammad Ali Nayil. He says fixers like Tarek give the good ones a bad name. During war, he says, it's even worse.
And at one point, the fixers would be stubborn and they would tell them, it's either you give me my $400 a day or I'm leaving you here.
In a war zone.
In a war zone. This is when you have to be honest, because they are depending on your honesty in order for them to get their job done. And at the trust that they give you, because they're hanging a lot of trust on you as a fixer, you don't have to take an advantage of that, because in this case, you're going to mess up your reputation.
Muhammad Ali is right. We do hang a lot of trust on fixers. They watch your stuff, sleep in the shady hotel room next door, tell you which road is safe. If you can't trust them, who can you trust? A month goes by before Tarek resurfaces and admits he took the money.
I got a pretty long email from him apologizing for the situation.
That's Zariah back home in the States.
Saying that he knew he had made a wrong deed and that he wanted to right it and please work with him and that he was very sorry.
Zariah and I both believe Tarek. He is sorry. Maybe he's just bad at running a business. Or maybe he did plan to scam Zariah all along. Either way, Tarek says he wants to start over. He says these days he's looking for new work as a fixer in Iraq.
That was Kelly McEvers in Beirut for us. Her report was part of Working. It's a co-production with Homelands Productions. To see a slideshow about life as a fixer, check our website. It's marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Since 1937, managing money with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note, everybody from Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson to New York Senator Charles Schumer have been bemoaning the slow decline of the American stock markets. And today there was at least one indication they might have cause for their distress. According to Thomson Financial, Europe has passed the United States in straight stock market value. Capitalization on Europe's 24 stock markets, that includes Russia, we ought to point out, had risen to almost $16 trillion as of last week. That's about $100 billion more than the U.S. Not a huge difference on a relative scale, but it is the first time that's happened since the First World War. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow jumped 128 points, 1%. The Nasdaq spiked 28 points, 1.1%. The S&P 500 picked up 13 points. That is nearly 1%. Thanks to Miguel Macias on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by Wendy Sykes. Next time on this program, a tax dodger comes clean.
They were so helpful, and they did it very slow, like they were talking to a school kid or something. And it made me understand the ins and outs.
That was the IRS he was talking about there. I'm Kai Rizdahl. I hope you can join us for that story tomorrow.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.